Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out with Kevin Dunn and Brad Kellner. The Monday edition, but it is a basically holiday week edition of the Triple Option. So it will be a strange week, but a good one because it will be off, of course, for the Thanksgiving holiday. But, of course, we got game day right after that on a Friday. So a really interesting week, a little short week. So there'll be a ton of Iowa State talk, a lot of Big 12 discussion. And two Big 12 games, gentlemen, over the weekend, one having to do with Iowa State. And there are some Iowa State fans that believe this was actually one of the biggest wins that they've had in the program's history. Definitely one of the most impressive wins that Iowa State's had in recent history. It is their first shutout since 2017 versus Kansas. BK said that doesn't count. So it's their first shutout. And actually, this is strange. Even in the stat that I got this from, it does list shutouts other than Kansas.
Mm.
So
are you
even,
serious?
Yeah, like even everybody understands, like, well, you can't just be counting, you know, Kansas stats.
That's embarrassing.
So like, if you got your career high versus Kansas, like it was versus Kansas. Dude. So his next best career high was this game.
That's a bigger asterisk than using steroids. If you do something good against Kansas, you put a huge asterisk by that.
I agree.
That's kind of like putting FBS opponents only.
Yeah.
No, it is. It's, yeah. So they all said the first.
What an exclusion.
No, they did. First shutout for Iowa State since Kansas 2017, but first shutout for Iowa State versus a team other than Kansas since 2015, and that was versus Texas.
Does Charlie Strong Texas also fit in that asterisk mold, too?
No, that's Texas.
They lost to Kansas, so.
We're too damn good to be in that asterisk category. Iowa State hasn't won, though, gentlemen, at Texas since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Was the last time DOC. They won. Yeah, exactly. Tom Herman remembers it really well. So a lot of people are saying, though, because of the fashion in which Iowa State beat K-State in Formageddon, because it was such an Old Testament-style butt-whipping that it – and I heard Randy Peterson, who does great work for the Des Moines – the Des Moines Register,
mm-hmm.
Right? Is that it? He writes great stuff. You should go check it out if you want to follow the matchup for Iowa State. He said this is the biggest win of the year in terms of just the way it looks on the surface, right? Just style points. Since their 66-10 win versus Tech in 2016, that's the game that he compared it to.
That was a Mahomes game.
That was versus Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 60,
and you've talked about 10. That game a lot because that was the game where Brett Veach.
He was there at that game.
Fell in love with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Brett Veach, the GM of the Chiefs.
Yeah. Mahomes got hurt at halftime, mm-hmm. and it was rumored that he wasn't coming out because they were getting blown out by Iowa State. And hell, Mahomes insisted upon coming out even though he was hurt.
That's a great nugget right there.
And even though everybody knew, this guy's going to get drafted pretty high. Your thoughts, though, man, they were up, 35-0 at halftime of this game. It was not even close. I thought it would be a much closer game. And history suggests that it would be a closer game. I mean, this has been a really close rivalry for a while. Formageddon is never really a blowout.
No, it's actually been pretty one-sided. I mean, the games have been close, but going into Saturday, K-State had won 12 of the previous 13 matchups against Iowa State. So that was kind of the one thing a lot of K-State fans were pointing to. Like, all right, I know our team is kind of falling apart, but somehow, some way, we always play really, really well whenever we've got Iowa State on the schedule. And that did not happen at all on Saturday.
No, it didn't. They had Will Howard, who looked awful. He threw a pick. We've talked about him. And then they brought in, we can have some fun with this name, Nick Ast. A-S-T.
The T is silent, I believe.
Nick
The T is silent, and go ahead and double up on the S's. They're not great quarterback play going on.
That's very unfortunate.
I know. Nick Ast. Deuce Vaughn, I mean, they never really got him going, and they were behind so quickly in this thing. So Vaughn is still someone to kind of be concerned about, but all in all, what Iowa State was able to do was take away the run, and defensively, we've talked about their three levels. They've got Bailey, Rose, who Herman talked about today, and Rose has had a big-time year, and then the back end, which is pretty good. They are going to come up and press. They're pretty physical defensively. They're fundamental defensively. The biggest question about them has been Purdy in the offensive line, and they were fine this game.
Yeah. I thought they were more than fine this game. I mean, I think
offensive line was fine. Purdy was above that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much more you could have asked for from Iowa State on Saturday. I mean, if they play like they did against Kansas State here in Austin on Friday, they're going to beat Texas, and they could beat Texas by a couple of scores. I mean, they were that good. Now, we haven't seen that consistency from Iowa State all year long, right? They've been very up and down. We've talked about Brock Purdy's issues, decision-making, turnovers. he's just looked inaccurate at times this year, or just stuff that we hadn't seen from Brock Purdy over the last couple of years. We've seen more often than not this year, but I thought he played his best game of the season this past Saturday, and look, that's a scary thought potentially for Texas, right? I mean, what Brock Purdy are you going to get on Friday? Are you going to get the one you saw against K-State? Are you going to get the one you've seen the rest of the year? I think that's going to go a long way in determining who wins this football game. But Iowa State's got to be beaming with confidence, guys. I mean, that was a rivalry game, and they absolutely took it to K-State on Saturday. That was their most complete performance, without question.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's like I said, the matchup for me, it does help Texas. Iowa State's offensive line probably hadn't seen a defensive line this disruptive. I mean, Oklahoma State's like that, but man, Texas defensive line is really, really disruptive. Oklahoma State does a lot of blitzing, right? Mm-hmm. They do a lot of stunts and twists. Texas doesn't do a lot of that. They should do more of it. They don't do a lot of that. They guys just win. Texas
yeah.
guys win one-on-one matchup. Joseph Osai, I've said it before, his pass rushing repertoire is not impressive. He's just overwhelming people with sheer tenacity. Mm-hmm. He just keeps coming over four quarters, and the other guy's like, I'm tired, man. When are you going to get tired? I'm a little worn out. So in this game, I think it's going to be a good matchup for Texas with that rush defense going against that offensive line. The one thing you got to worry about is how they use those tight ends, right? They're going to come in, put those tight ends in the box, and they're going to use them in the running game to give themselves numbers. Then they're going to overwhelm you in the running game. They're going to be able to put 7 to 8 guys in the running game, and Texas has to match those numbers. Then I worry about it truly becoming a one-on-one on the outside where you're giving no help to your corners because you can't afford to. Now, you did a great job versus Chuba and versus Spencer Sanders, so that is the blueprint. How you beat Oklahoma State is the blueprint for Texas going to this game. You can shut down Breece Hall, which nobody's done all year long, but also nobody has shut down Chuba to that extent the way Texas did. If you can shut down Breece Hall, at least contain and neutralize him, then you can force Brock Purdy to beat you. Still to this, I don't think Brock Purdy in his current state, I know it's in him, but there's the way he's played so far this year, I would bank on Brock Purdy trying to beat me, and I'd go with that all day, every day, and twice on Sunday rather than letting Breece Hall get loose. Because I don't know if Brock Purdy can beat you, and I don't know if they have the weapons on the outside necessarily to try to win like that. That's not how Iowa State wants to win. You got to force Iowa State to beat you in a way they don't want to do. And they don't want to beat you by having to throw the football a ton and definitely having to throw the football outside to the wide receivers. They want to throw to those tight ends. They want to control the game that way, play action pass, and they want to win that game essentially in a telephone booth if they could do it. If you're Texas, you got to kind of make this game about your speed and about your ability to reset the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, Xavier Hutchinson is their JUCO kid who you mentioned Milton being out, Rod, and he had over 100 yards at 111. Yeah, he looks good. So he's obviously someone, because they don't have a lot of it, they actually are going to rely on that. And if you look at, I was looking at Breece Hall, this was before this game, but 19 of his 13 rushing scores were 11 yards or more. Like, he pops them.
He does pop.
I mean, 75, 66, 58, 32. He's got four others of 11-plus. Like, you know, there will be times where you think you have him and you're doing a pretty good job,
yep,
and you think you're really dominating the offensive line. He doesn't need a lot to actually go.
No, I agree. That's what Texas did a really good job, right? Even up against, I know Lady Brown ended up getting injured for West Virginia and also against Oklahoma State. The biggest issue for Texas early on this season on defense was missed tackles.
Yep, that's it.
It's missed tackles. Yes, the corners were hurting them with the explosive plays on the outside, but everybody gets beat. It was the easy yards they were giving up and the easy first downs they were giving up on missed tackles early on in the season. And for the most part, they haven't completely cleaned it up. Everybody, they're still missing tackles, but not missing double-digit tackles. They were averaging around 15 missed tackles per game in the first stretch of the Big 12 run, and now I think they've taken that down to single digits. And not only that, but you don't see the explosive yardage given up and allowed after those explosive plays. It means guys are rallying to the football, or when they do miss a tackle, they were in a better position when they missed. They didn't miss it,
yep,
by just totally whiffing on a guy and going flying in the other direction, launching themselves like a missile into an offensive ball carrier. No, they set themselves up. Yeah, they may have gotten juked, but at least the guy had to slow down. At least he had to pivot and go back to your help that was rallying inside.
Yep.
So you just see better fundamentals, better pursuit to the football. I watched the West Virginia game again today, and that's what I saw. Yeah, I saw saw missed tackles, and I'll count them up here for you in a second, but you didn't get the explosive yardage after the missed tackles. Guys are rallying to the football, party at the football is the mentality, doing a much better job of that. You're going to need that versus Breece Hall, because he's going to beat some guy one-on-one. If he's one-on-one with one of your defenders, he's going to win some of those, and when he wins, you got to have guys rallying to the football to make sure you keep that yardage to a minimum.
Yeah, no question. And we've seen that aspect of the Texas defense get better throughout the course of the season. Yeah, hopefully with two bye weeks, they've been able to work on it even more, and hopefully it's gotten even better because, yeah, this will be their toughest test. Breece Hall, the most talented individual on offense in the Big 12 this year. I mean, if the season ended today, he's your offensive player of the year in this conference.
Pretty easily, too.
Yeah, it feels that way. With the inconsistencies we've seen at quarterback, right, you generally think, okay, who's the best quarterback? Whoever that is, that guy's going to be player of the year. But you know, Spencer Rattler got benched at one point. Sam hasn't been himself this year. Brock Purdy hasn't been what we expected him to be this year.
Chuba
hasn't been what he expected him to be this year. So it feels like that is Breece Hall's award. How about this cut? This is from Tom Herman earlier today at his game week press conference. By the way, if you missed that, you can find it on our website, hornfm.com. The very first question Tom Herman was asked was about Iowa State's performance against K-State. And he said, or he was asked, would you have rather Iowa State won a close game, or are you happy they won 45-0? Like, did that performance get your team's attention? Here's what Herman had to say.
I don't know either way. I think them looking as good as they did, certainly, I want to say it got our guys' attention. They've had our guys' attention. You know, the minute the game was announced on Wednesday that we were not going to be able to play Kansas, that our players went immediately into preparation mode for Iowa State, and you can't help but have a ton of respect and attention paid to Iowa State and the things that they've been able to do here over the last few weeks.
So there you go. There's Tom Herman, right, saying they had our respect even before their game on Saturday, but they definitely should have it right now. Look, for Texas, it's the same mentality you've had the last three games, right? I mean, they went into this sort of six-game stretch after those back-to-back losses to Oklahoma and TCU, knowing that they could not afford another slip-up. So let's find a way to win. Go 1-0. I know people hate the cliche, but that's what you have to do, and all the goals for Texas are still out in front of them. They got to find a way to get it done on Friday.
It's just, I'm trying to think as a fan, being alive and trying to remember a time where you felt like it could go either to the guy gets fired, could happen very easily the last month, or you could win the conference championship. Like, both those things still being not only available, but very much on the table.
Mac Brown. 2013.
Oh, you're right. That would have been it.
Well, that was the deal, allegedly.
No, but the deal
was allegedly. Like, he wins, right, he stays. If he loses, he's done, he goes.
Yeah.
If he didn't win the Big 12, I should say. Not because he lost the de facto Big 12 title against Baylor in that last game.
The Ice Bowl.
The Ice Bowl.
So damn cold.
Yeah, Makovic would have been... Although he wouldn't probably need to get fired in 96. So, yeah, you're right.
Makovic is so weird, though.
Makovic always kind of felt like that.
Won games, won conference titles, and still, that's a lesson, though, for anybody, right? Didn't make enough friends, didn't have enough allies when the fit hit the shan.
And Mac made so many.
And Mac had so many that he probably stayed.
He had these deals under the table.
And Makovic didn't have enough where Makovic, somebody should be able to fight for Makovic and go, whoa, hey, man, the guy's actually won some conference championships, man. He's not a bum. But by the time it was at the end, everybody wanted Makovic gone, and nobody could see the good. All they could see was the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of the good and leaving out the bad, my friends at Diamonds Direct, that's all they're doing. How about this? Due to the, and I cannot believe this is a real thing. My friends at Diamonds Direct last week had their biggest store-wide sale ever, largest store-wide sale they've ever had. And due to the overwhelming response they had last week, because they know a lot of you folks went there, and it probably was crowded, and for good reason, because it was the best sale they've ever had, over 20% off on everything in the store. Well, now they are going to extend their big annual pre-holiday store-wide sale. That's right, all the way through Cyber Monday. So if you didn't get a chance to get out there this weekend, and you're kicking yourself, you're very upset, like, man, I wish I'd have got out there to that sale at Diamonds Direct. I could have bought something special for that special person in my life, will you still have time? Bottom line, folks, you get an extra week to take advantage of these extraordinary savings. You can save 20% and more on earrings, rings, pendants, bracelets, designer fashion jewelry, colored gemstones, engagement rings, wedding rings, everything at my friends at Diamonds Direct. So as soon as you walk in the store, everything you look at will be 20% off or more. Diamonds Direct, they want everybody to save. As a matter of fact, when I went there, I bought my my girlfriend's engagement ring. Sorry, my fiance's engagement ring. Still getting used to it. But I was able to get the girl of my dreams the ring of her dreams, right? It was the perfect ring for the perfect girl. And they'll help you do the same thing. It can help you find the perfect gift for any occasion. Just walk in there if you're a baller on the budget like me. Tell them what your price range is. Tell them what the occasion is. And just watch them work their magic. Just head to Diamonds Direct. You can go to DiamondsDirect.com to find out more about this incredible sale. 20% off or more through Cyber Monday. But just go in there and walk in and experience the Diamonds Direct difference for yourself. It's Diamonds Direct. It's where Austin gets engaged. It's where I got engaged.
Only two games in the Big 12 this past weekend, guys. We talked about Iowa State beating Kansas State, and the other game wasn't much closer. You know, going into the weekend, we're like, all right, this is a really, really important weekend for the Big 12. The conference championship picture will clear itself up a lot. But, hey, we should have some four-quarter intense football games with Farmageddon and Bedlam, and neither one came close to living up to the hype. Oklahoma all over Oklahoma State, 41-13, the final score. OU was up 21-0, not even 10 minutes into the football game. I mean, this game was over in the first quarter. Then Spencer Sanders gets hurt, and Shane Illingworth comes in, and he looks like a junior high kid going up against a college defense. It was not good at all for Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy, gentlemen, now 2-14 against Oklahoma.
Man.
I feel like there are two big questions from this game. Number one, what's it going to take for Mike Gundy to lose his job in Stillwater? I mean, I know Oklahoma State's been very, very relevant, but to be 2-14 against your biggest rival, like at some point that can't be enough. And then number two, it's the question we've asked the last couple of weeks, and I feel like it's starting to become closer and closer to a definite yes. Is Oklahoma the best team in this conference?
Yeah, I think we all said that a couple weeks ago, but this felt more like old OU, you know. Not just the best team in a league of pretty crappy or average teams this year, which is kind of what it had felt like for most of the year. But they're really coming together. And the biggest difference with them, guys, the offensive line has gotten it together. Not a shock considering who their offensive line coach is.
Yeah.
And they had veterans there. Remember, it didn't make sense how poorly they were playing. But you get Ramondre Stevenson back. He goes for 141.
Yeah, he looks good.
He does, doesn't he?
Looks good.
And Marvin Mims, if you've been watching OU the last month, Marvin Mims is just getting better and better and better. He's already right now one of the best receivers in the league.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think Pro Football Focus had him as one of their top five highest graded Power Five receivers for this week. He's starting to come into his own. You're right about the offensive line. Shouldn't be a surprise there. The defensive line is probably the biggest impact position right now and the way they're improving. Because, man, they're putting a ton of pressure on opposing quarterbacks right now, and they're doing it through the twists and stunts. They finally look comfortable in that Alex Grinch system. You can tell they look comfortable, and now the guys on the back end don't have to cover as long because they're getting pressure on the opposing quarterback. So when those guys were exposed, because in the Big 12, you know, you can get downfield and have those vertical passing games and really exploit those DBs. I think the DBs have improved in their coverage, but I think more it's about the guys like Ronnie Perkins being able to apply pressure on the opposing quarterback. And yeah, him coming back too, Ronnie Perkins.
Those drug guys were pretty good.
You're right, Ramondre Stevenson. That's true.
Yeah. Those guys have been huge for them.
I can see why they didn't kick him off the team now.
Yeah, smart move.
Well, they shouldn't have been kicked off the team for weed smoking.
No, they shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Okay, I think you said they should have been. No, they shouldn't have been.
I'm with you on that.
But, man, I mean, we sometimes joke and poke fun at Oklahoma's defense, but, I mean, they had a first-round pick last year, and they've got two first-round talents on defense with Ronnie Perkins and Nick Benito. I mean, those guys are playing some spectacular football right now. And, yeah, I agree. I mean, Oklahoma has rounded into form, and I don't think anybody wants to play them, and they've got a pretty clear shot. They actually need some help from Texas, by the way. Like, there is a scenario in which Oklahoma can win out and not make it to the Big 12 championship game.
Okay.
So Texas, if Texas beats Iowa State, that actually bodes well for the Oklahoma Sooners, and that's your most likely conference championship scenario. If Texas gets in, it's likely to be playing against Oklahoma unless they somehow get upset in one of their final couple of games. What about the Oklahoma State question, though, guys, real quick? I mean, Mike Gundy, 2-14 in Bedlam. Mm. He just always craps the bed, for lack of a more politically correct term. I mean, he is just overmatched every single time these two teams play against each other.
He does. Remember, Les Miles is actually pretty good against them. And I say pretty good, relatively speaking, meaning maybe he was 2-4 or whatever. It wasn't as bad as that, and he pulled off some big upsets. Here's the problem, guys. Who is easily, by far, the best coach in Oklahoma State football history?
Mm-hmm. The guy who won that fake national title in 1945?
No.
When they claimed the title over Army, even though Army was serving our country in World War II?
And going undefeated. Yeah, yeah, right. Whoever that guy is, it's Mike Gundy. And so you're in that spot. I'm with you, BK. At some point, that only goes so far. What do you let it go to 2-18? Do you let it go to 2-25? Like, when do you say, okay, we're going to give it another shot, even if you know you're probably not going to be able to replace that guy?
That's the question, right? I mean, Oklahoma State, they've won 9, 10, 11, 12 games under Mike Gundy. They're relevant in the national picture, but comes at a cost. You're losing to your biggest rival every single year. So
who's a top four program of all time? So you have to understand, you know, exactly. Your house may not be as big as theirs, but this is the biggest house you've ever lived in.
Have perspective. I do. I don't. I'm with you, though, BK. I know this is when you question it. You're not Michigan, all right? Losing to Ohio State.
Well, yes, it's different.
You know what I mean? That's what I feel you, but the truth is, what's the standard now at Oklahoma State? So now Gundy has pushed the standard to you should expect to, you know, be in competition to win the Big 12, get close to 9-10 wins every year. And I agree, they should be able to beat and upset Oklahoma more often. There's no way you're going to upgrade and get a guy better than Gundy right now. It's not like Gundy's a bum.
No.
But he definitely shrinks. There's shrinkage, as Seinfeld would say. Shrinkage in big moments. And that's, you don't want that. He's having more shrinkage in big moments. So I agree. I don't know if you're going to upgrade, but
makes me want to puke.
That's a tough decision to make. That's a tough decision to make. That is hard.
Yeah, just looking at Twitter, which is not always the best representation of a fan base, a lot of them are ready.
Or humanity in general.
Or humanity in general. Yeah, a lot of Pokes fans are ready to make the move, and I don't blame them.
I don't blame him either, but I've seen this long enough, and Rod took the words out of my mouth. Be careful with what you do.
Because
there are a lot of programs, including even this one, that kind of overrate or blow out of proportion what they should be, and you should kind of have realistic expectations. I would say A&M has more of a right when they were losing to Texas all the time to think, all right, we've got the resources to try and get this done.
Michigan,
Ohio State thing, like you said.
Yeah.
All right, let's get ready for a little one and done. We're going to continue with the really Texas-Iowa State talk because heard Tom Herman talking about Sam and really both these quarterbacks. They have not had the type of year that they thought, but they still have it in them. Let's get into it up next.
I like that 5-star recruit at Kentucky. He's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's one and done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
I think two of the biggest disappointments in terms of players in the Big 12 this year would have to be Sam Ellinger and Brock Purdy. And, man, this is going to be quite the matchup this Friday. And at the end of the day, guys, I think it could come down to them. Breece Hall has been fantastic. He really has been. And this offensive line, the Iowa State offensive line, played well. If you watch the Iowa State-Kansas State game, that's as good as Iowa State has been, certainly with the offensive line. But really all the way around, we even mentioned the receiver, Xavier Hutchinson, who's a JUCO kid who had 111 yards to go with those four tight ends, but specifically those three. And they all kind of bring a little something to the table. Chase Allen, number 11, with the long hair. He also deals in aims on the side. He is more the receiver as a tight end, but he's put enough weight on now where he can come in and crack block you. They remind me so much of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. They really do with those three tight ends. And they'll split them out, and then all of a sudden, you know, they'll look at your personnel and go, oh, you went with the dime or the nickel. We're going to go ahead and go power and go jumbo, and those guys start caving in the outside, which really helps out teams that don't have great offensive lines, specifically great offensive tackles.
Sidebar, does anyone not deal on the side at Iowa State? I just feel like that comes with the territory.
Right.
They've got more dealers than smokers up there.
Yeah, they got a supply and demand issue there. But yeah, so Iowa State looked as good as they have on Saturday. If they play like that, I think BK's right. It's going to be an Iowa State win. But it's really going to come down to these two quarterbacks, because I think Texas does match up well, like Rod said, defensively with that offensive line. They should be able to win that matchup. And at that point, it comes down to tackling. So if any of those old tackling issues come into play, Breece Hall will pop one. I gave the numbers earlier that this guy, majority of his touchdowns, usually when you average 23 or 24 carries a game, you get on a pretty good team, which is what they've been, you get more than four freebies, which is what he had of like 1 yard, 2 yard, 3 yard touchdowns. No, I mean, 11 yards feels like a freebie for him. This guy will pop him if you don't tackle well. That could come back to hurt Texas. But if Texas continues to show improvement defensively like they have, I like their front six. I like their safeties. I like how their safeties even are going to match up with a team that doesn't have a tremendous amount of speed. So I'm not sure they're going to be able to completely pick on the Texas cornerbacks, even though if they get into a little size matchup with Allen split out on a Jameson, playing the ball could be an issue. But all in all, I like the way Texas matches up. Guys, this is going to come down to which Brock Purdy we see. It really is. And I've seen Brock Purdy. I saw him make the worst play that he's made probably since seventh grade in Fort Worth. You know what I'm talking about right now. And I know that's going back a month, but he's had too many. Not like that, because he's never going to have another one like that where he literally is getting sacked and just flings the ball up in the air behind him and to the left with no one there. And there was a TCU defender who, I mean, usually on film, he'd be getting blasted. What the hell are you doing there? Did you get blown up and thrown, you know, on to the other side of the line?
Why are you 10 yards up the field?
Right. What are you doing? And it hits him in the chest and goes back for six. Purdy has tried to force it too much this year. If Texas can force him to do that, then they're going to be in good shape. But if Brock Purdy throws some of the dimes and makes, more importantly, the decisions that he made, like he did against Kansas State, this is going to be a really tight game, and I would give advantage Iowa State. On the flip side, guys, Sam Ehlinger, I mean, we gave the PFF grades last week, and Sam headed into the week at number 41 for them. 41. This is a guy who legitimately, outside of Austin, people thought was going to be a Heisman candidate. And legitimately, building off of what he did his sophomore and junior year, analytics people, like PFF, thought, we're going to get an 86 or 87 passing grade. We're at 73 right now.
Yeah, I mean, we were having conversations before the season that Sam Ehlinger might be the third best quarterback in college football, right? It was Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, who kind of felt like those two guys were in a tier of their own. But then in that second tier, like everything that Sam had done over his first 3 years, it felt like he had the chance to be the third best QB in the country this season. And as you mentioned, he's graded as the 41st. Is it 41st or 41th?
41st.
Okay.
41st. It would be the 63rd for Brock Purdy on that same list. He had passing grades of 88 and 82.2, respectively, going back to 2018 and 2019. And he headed into this game at 60.7. So I'll be curious to see how much that shot up. But this has not been a good year for either guy. They really haven't been themselves. And I feel like because of some of the inefficiencies on offense, that they're forcing stuff. Some of that has to do with both their offensive lines. A lot of it has to do with the guys outside, or maybe the lack thereof.
Yeah.
So, I think the better quarterback in this game, like usual, is going to have a big advantage. But I just thought, I thought heading into this game preseason, it was going to be the two best quarterbacks in the conference with Rattler, and that's just hadn't been the case this year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's, I don't know, I think maybe because I know Sam struggles so intimately.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy's struggles to me are a little bit more mysterious, right? He's got an All-American tight end. We talked about his
more
tight end
set of grades.
Right? And the offensive line's not great, but it's not as bad as Texas' offensive line was early on. But maybe it was that bad. I don't think it was, because I'm looking at Breece Hall and holes being opened up. So at least they did. There was something that they could rely on as an identity of that offensive line or identity of the offense. And they have the most productive rusher in the country. So to me, his struggles are, to me, a little bit weirder. Like that's a little bit more mysterious. I don't understand why he's struggling so much. I know why Sam's struggling. I know why.
I think Purdy's struggles are a little bit more self-imposed, right? He's only been sacked 8 times compared to 17 for Sam. And you know Sam Ellinger would kill to have Breece Hall or just any semblance of a consistent running game where he doesn't have to do all the work on the ground and the tight end weapons that Iowa State has. So I think part of it has to do with the lack of wide receiver skill. I mean, the last couple of years, there's been a Hakeem Butler. There's been an Alan Lazard. There's been a Sunday player. And Xavier Hutchinson, don't sleep on this.
No, he's good.
He's turning into one of those guys. He's got 41 catches, which is far and away the most of anybody on Iowa State. So that guy can cause some problems here on Friday. But he's not the level of either of those two guys that I just mentioned. And he really is, because Tariq Milton's hurt, he really is their only consistent weapon on the outside. So maybe that's part of it, but just watching Brock Purdy, it feels like a lot of it is his doing. He just doesn't look as comfortable out there, and he doesn't look as sure of himself.
It was his doing. I think he was almost too confident early on in the year, and too confident in his arm, and too confident in his eyes.
I was confident
times.
In him, too.
I was too, yeah.
Fan.
I mean,
I was saying he could be potentially him, if not Sam, he'd be the best quarterback in the Big 12.
Yeah, a lot of NFL people were excited about him, too. And I'm talking more third round, I mean, a bit of a later round guy, but there were a lot of people that had expectations for him, and I do think it was more self-inflicted. I do think a lot of it has to do with the receiver. So you're right. Don't sleep on Hutchinson. Milton being out was big, and it took him a little while to just utilize those tight ends. But they do use them well. You could hear it in Tom Herman's voice today, guys. For a man who loves him some 11 and 12 and would probably have no problem going to 13 personnel, he wishes he had tight ends like that. Now, Texas will have Jared Wiley, should have him back in this game, but I'm excited about it. And I do think it'll come down to Brock Purdy and Sam and who makes the fewest mistakes and also who's the most accurate when they need to. Who's actually accurate with some of those tight windows? Neither guy all year long has been, but if you get the Purdy from last week, watch out.
What are your expectations from Sam Ellinger on Friday? I mean, we've talked about it a lot. Hasn't been the same player, but he's had time to rest up. He's had time to heal up. He'll have more weapons than he's had all season, right? This should be the first game in which Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington are on the field at the same time. You hope Josh Moore and Jared Wiley are good to go as well. I mean, what do you expect? This is a very, very good Iowa State defense, but do you think we can get a vintage Sam type of performance this week?
He's going to be as healthy as he has been. And another thing, guys, with the 3 weeks, I do expect this Texas offense to have something dialed up and a creative game plan and maybe even throw them for a loop for a little while because there's a couple different directions they can go in this game. I think both teams got to be careful if they just try and run their head against brick walls, because I do think both run defenses have an advantage in this game.
You expect that from the Texas coaching staff?
Yes, I do.
Wow. I mean, I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful not. That's what I'm hoping. They come out, and like we've talked about, when they get a month off, guys, for bowl games, I mean, it doesn't feel like it does week in and week out. That's when usually you have, whether even if it's a Georgia-Utah-type game plan where Utah, they changed some things up offensively. Georgia, they didn't really did it. They had little wrinkles on what they had done all year. And they should have that. They have enough time to do that in this game. And they're going to have to against Haycock.
They've been very subtle changes.
Very subtle.
When they do. I mean, snug formation was their big thing.
That was their wrinkle against Utah.
And apparently they were right. It threw Utah off. Utah didn't know what the hell to do about snug, which is basically bunch formations. And, yeah, and against Georgia, I think they moved Colin Johnson around a little bit. And in the Big 12 title game, I think that year they moved Colin Johnson around, but very little. They don't do much.
Very little. They utilized Trey Watts in that game.
What they decide to do is, but, yeah, still just on flare routes they've been using all year long. Trey Watson. They didn't do anything different schematically.
Right.
Creatively.
A couple screens in there, too. But yeah.
Yeah, same stuff they've been doing all year long. So my point is, what they do after bye weeks is they just decide to execute better, right? There's no real evolution. It's about execution for them. Like, they don't really evolve the offense. They don't become something new over a bye week or after the bowl game. They just become better version of what they already were.
Right. And
I think that's why Tom Herman's going to – they don't come out and do the same thing they always do, but they'll just do it better. it'll be better execution than it usually is because they had so long to work on it and everybody's fresher, so you have better players running the place.
Whatever it is, be more efficient.
Yeah.
However you do it. But it would be nice to actually have some legitimate wrinkles off of what you've been doing all year, because one of the things that does work for them is they can get so simple and I think you can, and predictable, that like the Utah game, you all of a sudden you go to bunch and they're thrown off because they're not looking for it. So take advantage of how predictable you are.
Yeah. No, that Devin Duvernay in the fade slot, they had the slot fade a couple of times, something they hadn't been doing all year, but something they'd done a few times. I don't know what they do with that extra time. They just get better at what they were already doing.
Some teams are like that.
Yeah, instead of evolution, it's just better execution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this year's Big 12, that might be enough. To beat Iowa State on Friday, that might be enough.
To beat Iowa State, it may be.
Yeah. To beat Oklahoma,
maybe
not.
I don't know
not.
About that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
This Oklahoma defense is getting a lot better.
Yeah. No question about that. All right,
still got Radley Hines, though, so you got a shot.
Oh, Radley Hines?
Oh, he's
Radley
so
Hines.
Great.
I forget his name.
He is so great. He tried to keep Oklahoma State
in
that game. He does it every
game. He really did.
Every game.
He's the win they got the touchdown that kept him in the game early.
It's laughable and has been since his freshman year.
He's a madman.
Oklahoma fans hate that dude more than Texas fans.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oklahoma State fans more than anybody. Else.
I don't want him to go. Give him 10 years.
I'm telling you, man. I'd love a little Spicoli action from that dude. All right, it's the triple option with RBKD. Good stuff on One and Done. Starting to preview Iowa State. We've got 3 days worth of shows. So we're really going to be hitting the Cyclones hard Monday through Wednesday. And speaking of Texas Iowa State, let's do this right now. Let's give away a pair of tickets to the game. That's right.
Nice.
Your chance to be at DKR Texas Memorial Stadium Friday morning, 11 a.m. The call-in number, 447-3776. You've got a trivia question. The 98th person to call in and get this trivia question right will win the pair of tickets. It's maybe the easiest trivia question of all time. What is the longest win streak that Iowa State has against Texas in program history? Iowa State's longest win streak against the Longhorns in program history. 447-3776. I'll leave the lines blocked for a couple of seconds, so if you're on the app, you have the chance to call. Caller number 98, because I'm definitely going to field all of those. All right, we've got Off the Record coming up next here. Florida man actually doing something good, and it begs the question, would you do the same thing? Up next.
D.D. Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a brain man comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! F***ing thing sucks!
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. It is time for another edition of Off the Record. This one is actually a tale of bravery. It's also a tale of bravery from the state of Florida. Florida man. But this time, I got to say, you're going to like this Florida man story. I think you always like him, but this time it is a story that is a complimentary of Florida man, not one that is disparaging of the Florida man. It comes from TMZ. This is from a video that has gone viral since, and you've probably seen it if you're out there listening to the show. The title is A Puppy Rescue, Man Pries Gator's Mouth Open to Save His Puppy. A puppy learned firsthand how scary nature can be. Apparently in Florida, this wild scene went down a pond somewhere in Florida, naturally where the poor little dog wound up. Apparently it's near a golf course. And it's still pretty terrifying. Apparently this pooch, it's a little small dog, kind of a tiny dog, got loose near this pond where there was like a 3-foot gator. It's not a big gator. He's not huge. It's about a 3-foot gator when you look at him, look at the video.
But it's a puppy.
It's a puppy. And
so,
the puppy
is tiny.
Yeah, the puppy is probably, I don't know, it's probably a 15-pound dog, 10-pound dog, maybe that? Is it even 10 pounds?
I don't think it's even 10.
You don't think it's even 10? It's smaller than that?
This thing is tiny.
Yeah.
It's tiny. It is tiny.
It's got big-ass ears, though. The ears are probably 8 pounds, and then the rest of the body's like 2.5.
It might be a 10-pound dog. It's one of those lap dogs, one you can put in your purse,
yeah,
something like that.
Bad bit, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
I'm pretty anti-purse dog.
That's a 5 or 6-pound, 7-pound dog, maybe.
Yeah, so it looks like it's in a park or something. There's a pond there. Well, apparently the dog gets... he gets close enough to the pond where a gator essentially gets the dog in its mouth, like within its jaws. It's got the dog clenched. The man runs over to the gator and grabs the gator by its jaws and starts to pry them open with his hands to free the dog. Right, he does so successfully.
This guy's from Florida, obviously.
Gets the dog free, no panic at all, lets the damn gator go, keeps it moving. Florida man.
That's Florida man. But that is something where you're from that area, right?
I don't know. I don't.
That's not someone who it's. I know it says retiree. Yeah, retiree maybe, but that's someone who just grew up in the state of Florida. There's no way you just jumped in that and go, oh, I'm just going to get in there. It's a small gator.
None of us would have any idea what to do in that situation, right? I mean, this guy's 74 years old. Apparently, he did this entire thing with a cigar in his mouth.
He did.
And he kept the cigar in his mouth throughout the entirety of this process. So,
baller.
This guy is the badass of all badasses out there. But
his name is Richard Wilbanks.
Yeah.
And he's 74 years old. His puppy's name is Gunner that he saved. He's an avid hunter. He just reacted quickly. Jumped into the pond to save the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
That's the type of dog.
It's a 3-month-old Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. I actually know what this. You've seen these dogs before a lot of different places. You remember? Okay, this is gonna be. I'm gonna give up my man card here. Remember? You guys remember Sex in the City and Charlotte's dog on Sex in the City? Okay.
I had a girlfriend that watched it a lot. Okay. So
yeah, it was Charlotte's dog on Sex in the City. BK is
this
staring
one?
At me. Yeah,
same breed
of dog. BK is challenging my manhood there.
Right, look at this. Look at this cigar.
Wilbanks said it happened so fast. Instinct just took over and adrenaline kicked in. I just went right into the water after the gator and Gunner.
Man, I'd be too scared of a Chubbs like situation happening, you know, from Happy Gilmore. I'm not trying to lose my hand to one of those bad boys.
It's like a 3-foot gator though.
Still,
you can handle a 3-foot gator.
I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably I would be worried if I took a golf club to its body, then he'd bite down on the dog, and that would be game over for the dog.
No, this guy went straight for the mouth.
He went straight for the mouth.
Once the dog got out, he still was holding on. I mean, once the dog got out, I would have let go of that thing instantly, and he didn't.
I'm trying to think what I would do in this situation. I mean, the first thing, I wouldn't be living in Florida, and I wouldn't be walking my dog anywhere close to where gators are around.
No.
I think they said it was, like, near his backyard. Like, that's, like, those ponds. Yes, ponds.
Yeah,
I
think he was just walking his dog
off
a leash just around the backyard, and a gator came out and snagged it. I don't know if I'd be willing to take that chance, though, knowing that gators live close to my place. Like, I'm keeping my dog on a leash.
There are a lot of dogs and cats that go missing in Florida.
From that?
Yeah.
From gators?
From gators.
There's no Richard Wilbanks around
to pry open the
gators' mouths.
And they're also not a 3-foot little baby gator.
Yeah. You guys would do this in this spot?
I like to think that I would, but once again, assuming that I was Florida guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gotta be Florida man.
Florida man.
Can't just be some big city yuppie and think you're going to do that. You ain't going to do that.
No.
And part of being Florida man is
gangster.
Is having a little meth in your system.
Oh,
to make decisions like that.
That's part of this guy's retirement fund is going towards meth.
He was smoking a cigar the whole time.
Yeah, it's fantastic,
Maybe
man.
It was a cigar laced with meth. Anything's possible.
Man.
What about you? You doing this? You don't have an animal.
BK's
pets.
Like, hell no, he's not doing that.
My family's got a lot of dogs. Trying to think if I'd do this. I'd like to think I would. Now, the good news is they don't have any tiny dogs that would get engulfed by a gator, so that would help a little bit.
Very true.
I feel like I would try something. I don't know if I would have gone straight for the prying the jaws open method. I would have tried something else first, but if it obviously wasn't working, I'd like to think I would have tried to do something like that.
Man.
I don't know. I mean, if I try a couple of seconds and it's not working.
I would say you don't have the time.
Right.
Once it grabs, it's pulling it into the water.
Yeah.
Like, that's how gators go. They grab on the shore. They pull into the water, and they start to do their roll. It's going to kill it within seconds.
So you dive it in? You dive it into the water?
All you have is seconds. Yeah. Like, if you wait and try to throw a rock at it, it's done. Like, it's dead.
Yeah.
The dog is dead.
Sorry
and he couldn't
that.
Have waited. He couldn't have taken that time because he had the cigar, so he couldn't have dove in.
That's true.
Because you could tell...
He had to get one puff in.
There was equal importance here. Not putting the cigar out and putting that down and saving his dog.
It is, because he has the cigar the whole time.
Yeah.
And when he's
puffing away.
And he's pretty calm as he grabs the gator while the gator has the dog in its mouth, in its clutches. He's just calmly prying open the jaws.
This guy may have killed someone before.
His bare hands.
Yes, this guy has some experience. It wouldn't surprise me if he was in the military. This guy was calm, cool, and collected.
So what would you do to the gator? Like, if this happened to you and you were able to rescue your pup, are you punishing the gator?
No,
he didn't.
Walk?
No, he let him capture the gator.
I know he didn't. I'm asking you guys.
No, it's being a gator.
Let him go?
He's being a gator. I agree. He's being a gator.
Dude, he's just doing what a gator does. I'm still pissed about Chubbs, man. I'm going after that.
He's just doing what a gator does, man. People can't get mad at that. And he's a small gator. The dog, actually, compared to the size of the gator, is pretty damn big. Because the gator's small.
Yeah.
The gator's like I said, the gator's like a 3-foot gator. The dog's not that small. The gator's like, no, I'm taking this damn thing down.
Little snack.
Mm. And is the gator small enough for there to be a mama gator close?
See, that's what
when
I...
When the gator's that small...
So that's what I would have been worried about, is that there's a mama gator in there, and the worst thing you can run into in the wild is a mama.
Of any kind.
Of any kind.
Yeah,
any
agree.
Kind. Rattlesnake, alligator, you name it.
Yeah.
I wonder... Yeah, I don't understand why that would be in my backyard. If I had a backyard where there could possibly be a gator, I'm having that thing at least drained, or they're going to come in there and try to capture gators and other animals once a month, or maybe once a week. Like, it's got to be
And the dog's
frequent.
Still staying on a leash, man.
Yeah.
Dog's still on the leash.
I'm not taking any chances around those parts.
And I'm probably going to get me a open carry so I can just carry a gun with me when I walk and shoot the gator.
You're in Florida. That will not be a problem.
Exactly.
That's not going to be.
Matter of fact, I'll join the majority of the state.
Go hang out with a naked chick outside of the Popeyes.
Didn't
I think she's been released by now.
Who was it? Was it Rick Perry that shot a coyote? Who shot a coyote or something? Did Rick Perry shoot a coyote?
Ted Cruz.
I swear it was Rick Perry that shot a coyote or something. Maybe I'm making
I don't
that up.
Remember. We'll have to look that up.
All right. I'm making up stuff. Oh, y'all remember this?
All right. We'll go to break on that thought. If you know the answer, text us. Specs text line 337-3776. Congrats.
Peter would not like Rod moving to Florida.
No chance. Congrats to Greg, by the way, for winning those pair of tickets.
Yeah, Rick Perry shoot a 2010.
Where? Outside of his house?
He killed a coyote during a jog. He was jogging.
Oh, so he was carrying during the jog.
I'm assuming so. Comes from the Texas Tribune.
About that.
Huh.
Says Perry said he will carry his .380 Ruger loaded with hollow point bullets when jogging on trails because he's afraid of snakes. He'd also seen coyotes in the undeveloped area, and when one came out of the brush toward his daughter's Labrador Retriever, Perry charged, "Don't attack my dog or you might get shot if you're a coyote," he said.
What did the coyote say? Did we get his thoughts on the situation? Did we get an interview from him?
This isn't Warner Brothers.
That's what I read. All right,
unreal. All right, there's off the record for the day. Florida man actually doing something positive. It really is 2020 after all. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. Let's get back into the Cowboys and Texans wins from yesterday, plus some breaking news regarding the Houston Rockets. The Rockets have just made a free agent splash. We'll tell you who they picked up next.